Imagine waking up, grabbing your morning coffee, and realizing that the fundamental rules of technology, the ones we've basically all been living by for decades, just completely changed overnight.
Yeah, it's a pretty wild thought.
Right. Well, welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are unpacking a single, just massively dense tech dispatch from a source known as Techonite.
Dated March 6, 2026.
Exactly. And let me tell you, the sheer volume of paradigm-shifting news in this one document is staggering. Our mission for this deep dive is to make sense of what the source calls the physical transformation of artificial intelligence.
Which is a heavy phrase.
It is.
Yeah.
We are looking at a critical 24-hour period where AI essentially stopped being just, you know, lines of code or text on a screen and started physically interacting with our actual world.
It really is a watershed moment we're looking at today, because for the longest time, we've lived in a world of deterministic software.
Right, the old rules.
Exactly. You know the drill. You click a specific button and the computer does exactly what that button's programmed to do. There is absolutely no guesswork.
Predictable.
Highly predictable. But this dispatch outlines a rapid, aggressive shift toward probabilistic digital entities.
Probabilistic. So guessing.
Educated guesses, yeah. We are now dealing with systems that learn on the fly, and most importantly, are being handed real-world power and physical agency. It's an incredibly thrilling leap forward, but anytime you cross a red line like this, you introduce an entirely new spectrum of risk.
Okay, let's unpack this, starting with the biggest shockwave of the morning.
OpenAI.
Yes, OpenAI's release of GPT 5.4. The source notes this is a major milestone because it's the very first production model with native computer use capability. For you listening at home, this is not just a chatbot anymore.
Not even close. To give you some context on what native means here, just a few weeks prior to this dispatch, the industry standard was much more fragmented.
It was a mess, honestly.
It really was. You had systems like Perplexity using an orchestration of, I think, 19 different specialized models just to string together complex tasks.
It's
right, Claude treating computer use as a separate bolt-on tool.
Yeah.
But what's fascinating here is that OpenAI has built this into GPT 5.4 from the ground up. It can literally see your computer screen.
See it, like visually.
Yes. It identifies the buttons, takes control of your actual mouse pointer, types on your keyboard, and runs your software.
So it's basically acting like a digital ghost sitting right at your desk.
That's a great way to picture it. It could write a program, run it, realize it made a coding error, and then just go back and fix its own error without you ever lifting a single finger.
Wow.
And it can do all this because of its massive memory capacity. The dispatch highlights that it has a 1 million token context window.
Okay, I see that term thrown around a lot. What does a 1 million token context window actually look like for a regular user who is just trying to get work done?
Think of a token as a piece of a word. A 1 million token window is roughly equivalent to handing this AI 10 full-length, highly dense novels. And it can remember every single word perfectly, all at once. So in a practical sense, you could feed it your company's entire code base.
Wow.
A year's worth of financial spreadsheets, an entire legal library, and it holds all of that in its active memory while it works on your screen.
That is insane. But also,
it's a massive double-edged sword. Speaking from a system architect's perspective, this is terrifying.
Right, because of the control.
When you give an AI the ability to directly control your mouse and keyboard, you are essentially granting it root access to your operating system.
Which means giving the AI the master keys to your house, right? It sounds incredibly convenient if it's just, you know, doing your boring data entry.
Yeah.
But terrifying if it goes off the rails.
That is the core danger of moving from deterministic to probabilistic systems. It hallucinates. It makes guesses.
And a bad guess with root access is catastrophic.
Exactly. If it misinterprets a command, or if its logic falters for a fraction of a second, it has the access to delete your core system files. It could send catastrophic emails to your entire client list or just completely break your computer's registry.
Just accidentally brick your machine.
The dispatch actually references a disaster from November 2025 involving a system called OpenClaw to illustrate this exact danger.
Yeah.
The strategic advice from the source is crystal clear here.
Keep it contained.
Yes. Until these safety guardrails are foolproof, this kind of native computer use should only be deployed in strict sandbox environments. You isolate it. You do not want this running free on your primary day-to-day machine.
Consider that a public service announcement for your hard drive. Yeah. So definitely sandbox that. But AI isn't just taking over our cursors. It's getting an actual physical body.
This is where things get really visual.
Yeah, let's pivot to hardware. Because at Mobile World Congress 2026 in Barcelona, Honor revealed something called the robot phone. And the concept here is straight out of science fiction. The dispatch says they've squeezed a three-axis mechanical gimbal with 4 degrees of freedom into a standard-looking smartphone.
To picture that, imagine your phone camera moving like a tiny human neck.
Which is deeply unsettling.
A little bit, yeah. 4 degrees of freedom means it can look up, look down, tilt side to side, and pan across a room. The camera literally pops out of the device like a little periscope.
The source even mentions it can rotate a full 360 degrees, track you perfectly as you move around your kitchen, and physically nod at you to confirm a command.
It nodded.
That is wild.
Which completely changes the psychology of how we interact with our devices. This is the perfect example of embodied intelligence.
Embodied intelligence.
Right. Your phone is no longer just a passive piece of glass that you pull out of your pocket to stare at. It is now a living miniature robot. The camera doesn't just record the physical world, it physically reacts to it.
So if I'm pacing around the room while on a video call?
You set it on a table, it traps your movements, finds the optimal angle, and follows you. And the dispatch notes Honor also showed off a humanoid robot that was literally moonwalking and dancing on stage at the event.
That feels like a very intentional flex. They aren't just showing off a phone, they're showing off their robotics chops.
They're signaling a massive shift toward home robotics. When a device can see its environment and physically move in response, it ceases to be just a consumer electronic.
It's an entity.
It becomes a physical digital entity in your home.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Because it's not just our phones that are fundamentally changing. Big tech is aggressively racing to own your entire digital life. And they are tearing down all the old rules to do it.
The ecosystem wars.
Yes. Let's talk about Microsoft and Project Helix. According to the dispatch, Asha Sharma, the new CEO of Microsoft Gaming, just essentially declared the end of the traditional physical console.
It is the death of the walled garden in console gaming.
Which is huge for gamers.
Absolutely. Project Helix is described as the first true hybrid console in history. What that means is it acts as a bridge. It runs both traditional Xbox games and PC games natively.
So no more choosing between console or PC.
Right. You could have an Xbox exclusive like Halo Infinite and a PC exclusive like Counter-Strike 2 running on the exact same machine with full access to PC storefronts like Steam and Epic Games.
The hardware specs rumored here are massive too. RTX 50 series or RDNA for GPUs.
Yeah.
But the hardware itself isn't really the story, is it?
No, it's not.
Because, wait, isn't Microsoft shooting themselves in the foot by killing off the traditional Xbox? People love their consoles. Why abandon a hardware market you helped build?
It looks that way on the surface. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, this is a masterclass in strategic pivoting. Microsoft essentially lost the traditional plastic hardware box war to Sony and the PlayStation 5.
The PS5 just dominated.
It did. It had better sales and incredible brand momentum. So what do you do when you can't win the game?
You flip the board.
You change the playing field entirely. Microsoft realized that their true advantage lies in the cloud, cross-platform services, and their massive Azure server infrastructure. To Microsoft, a physical console is now just an unnecessary obstacle standing between you and their cloud services.
So their strategy is basically, we don't care what piece of plastic you own as long as you're close for our software subscription.
Exactly. While Sony is doubling down on exclusivity, forcing users to buy the PS5 hardware to play their specific games, Microsoft is moving toward radical openness.
They want Game Pass everywhere.
On your smart TV, your phone, your PC. And frankly, they'd probably put it on the PlayStation if Sony allowed it.
Which is a brilliant way to monopolize the software side. But over on the hardware side, Apple is executing a totally different strategy to own your ecosystem.
Oh, the MacBook Neo.
Yes, they just dropped the MacBook Neo. And the price tag alone is causing a massive stir. A $599 laptop, or $499 if you're buying it for education.
And to understand why that price is so shocking, you really have to look under the hood. The massive twist here is that the MacBook Neo doesn't use their famous M-series computer chips.
Right.
It is powered by the A18 Pro chip.
That is literally an iPhone chip powering a Mac computer.
And the dispatch says the specs are surprisingly solid for an iPhone chip.
Yeah, you're looking at a 6-core CPU and a 5-core GPU with hardware ray tracing.
For those who aren't gamers or video editors out there, hardware ray tracing is what makes digital lighting, shadows, and reflections look photorealistic. It calculates how light bounces in real time.
Historically, you needed a massive, power-hungry desktop graphics card to do that.
Right, and Apple has managed to bake that capability into a chip originally designed for a phone. They claim it makes this budget laptop 50% faster than similar Intel machines.
But to get the price down to $499 for students, there have to be serious compromises. The dispatch mentions it has a plastic body instead of Apple's signature aluminum.
An LCD screen instead of an OLED.
Only 2 ports, less RAM, and no Touch ID. It feels very un-Apple. Why would a premium brand cannibalize their own market with a cheap plastic laptop?
Because it's a highly calculated surgical attack on the budget market, specifically targeting Chromebooks.
The education market.
Yes. For years, if you had $500 to spend on a laptop for a student, you bought a Chromebook or a budget Windows machine. Apple historically ignored this segment because their M-series chips are simply too expensive to produce for a budget device.
But by leveraging the massive manufacturing scale of the A18 Pro iPhone chip, they found a backdoor into the market.
It's not about the profit margin on a $500 laptop. It's about ecosystem acquisition.
Get them while they're young.
Precisely. If Apple can get a university student to buy a MacBook Neo instead of a Chromebook, they hook that student into the macOS ecosystem. iMessage, Apple Intelligence, early on.
It's a long-term investment.
They're willing to take a hit today to ensure that student buys a premium MacBook Pro, an iPhone, and an Apple Watch 10 years from now. They are aggressively trying to conquer the base of the pyramid.
It really is a land grab for our digital lives. But running all these incredibly smart devices from the GPT 5.4 digital employees to Apple Intelligence to project Helix's cloud gaming, it requires an incomprehensible amount of computing power.
Which brings us to the infrastructure wars.
Yes. The dispatch highlights a monumental deal between Meta and AMD, valued between $60 billion and $100 billion over 5 years.
The scale of this deal is almost hard to wrap your head around. Meta is buying 6 gigawatts of AMD Instinct GPUs, specifically using the custom MI450 architecture.
Okay, let's put 6 gigawatts into perspective for you listening. A standard nuclear power plant produces about 1 gigawatt of power. 6 gigawatts is the amount of electricity required to power roughly 6 million homes.
6 million homes.
Meta is essentially building a GPU army to train their massive Llama 4 AI models. But why AMD?
Mm-hmm.
Up until now, NVIDIA has been the undisputed king of AI chips. If Meta has $100 billion to spend, why not buy the industry standard?
Because nobody likes a monopoly, especially when you are the one paying the bills.
Fair point.
Up until this point, if you wanted to train a massive language model, you were completely at the mercy of NVIDIA and their H100 or H200 chips. Mm. NVIDIA dictated the astronomical prices. And because global demand was so high, companies had to wait months, sometimes years, for deliveries.
Meta cannot afford to be bottlenecked by a single supplier.
By investing tens of billions of dollars into AMD's custom MI450 architecture, Meta is aggressively diversifying its supply chain. They are telling NVIDIA that the era of complete dominance is over.
Which forces a new era of competition.
This introduces desperately needed price pressure and competition into the AI hardware market, which accelerates innovation across the entire sector.
It's a massive shift in the balance of power. But as we look at all this incredible progress, AI getting bodies, ecosystems opening up, massive computing power coming online, the dispatch takes a very sharp turn into the dark side of this tech boom.
And we really need to talk about the catastrophic cyber disaster in France.
Yes. Hackers breached a massive centralized database, specifically targeting Cegedim Santé software and a program called Mon Logiciel Medical, which is used by thousands of doctors across the country.
The numbers here are just staggering.
They stole 15.8 million medical records. It is the largest medical data breach in European history. And the human toll of this is devastating. We aren't just talking about stolen credit cards or leaked email addresses.
No, this is much more personal.
Hackers got away with 165,000 highly sensitive files containing doctors' personal, private notes. We're talking about the HIV status of patients, deeply private records regarding mental illness, and details about sexual orientation.
This raises an important question about the very architecture of our digital lives. Why did this happen on such a massive scale?
Because it was all in one place.
Exactly. It happened because the French health ministry opted for a centralized system. They wanted all medical data stored in one place for convenience, so any doctor could easily access a patient's file.
But as any system architect will tell you, a centralized system is essentially a digital atomic bomb waiting to go off.
If a hacker finds one single vulnerability in the armor, they get the keys to the entire kingdom. The dispatch links this back to a previous event called Predator Gate, reinforcing the point that when you pool highly sensitive data in one central repository, you create an irresistible target for malicious actors.
Let's ground this for the listener. Imagine applying for a job, and the HR department secretly buys this leaked database on the dark web to check if you have a history of depression or a chronic illness before they hire you.
It's horrifying.
That is the terrifying reality of a centralized breach.
And that kind of extortion and discrimination causes immense psychological terror for the victims. The source strongly advocates that we have to move away from these massive digital silos.
So what's the solution?
The solution outlined here is decentralization and strict end-to-end encryption. End-to-end encryption means that even if a hacker breaches the server and steals the files, the data looks like absolute gibberish.
Right. It's like putting a document through a shredder before you mail it.
Only the intended recipient has the tape to put it back together. The France disaster is a glaring, tragic warning to every nation that convenience can never supersede security when dealing with human lives.
So what does this all mean? If we look at the scope of this one 24-hour period from March 2026, the narrative is crystal clear. We are watching the boundaries between the digital and physical worlds collapse.
Rapidly collapse.
AI has gained hands to control our screens natively with GPT 5.4. It's gained a physical body to track us in the real world with the Honor robot phone. Hardware ecosystems are completely merging, as we see with Microsoft's Project Helix destroying the console divide, and Apple leveraging iPhone chips to dominate the budget laptop market.
And behind the scenes, the infrastructure powering all of this is sparking massive financial wars, like that Meta and AMD deal.
It truly is the year AI entered the physical world.
But the overarching lesson here, especially highlighted by the tragedy in France, is that our security infrastructures and our regulatory frameworks are struggling to keep pace with this hyper-evolution.
They really are.
Technology is ultimately just a tool. The true test for us as a society is whether we can balance this unprecedented new power with the responsibility it demands.
It's a lot to wrap your head around, honestly.
It is. And to leave you with something to really mull over as we wrap up today's deep dive, we've talked a lot today about AI getting root access to your computer to act as a digital employee. But think about this. If that probabilistic AI hallucinates, breaks into a secure network, or accidentally deletes a client's entire database while trying to fix a workflow.
Oh, wow.
Who is legally responsible? Is it the AI itself? Is it the software developer who built the model? Or is it you, the person who willingly gave it the keys to the keyboard?
That is a fascinating and kind of terrifying legal gray area to think about. Who takes the fall? Thank you so much for joining us as we unpack this incredible dispatch. We'll be back soon to explore more of what's shaping our world. Until next time. Stay curious.